Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Opened the door to that room and immediately saw JonBenet lying there. And it was a rush of relief. And I said, thank God I've got my child back. But I pretty quickly realized that it wasn't good.
On December 26, 1996, a six-year-old American girl was found dead in her family's home in Boulder, Colorado. Unfortunately, in and of itself, that would probably not make international news. It probably certainly wouldn't stay international news for 20 years. But this case had this intriguing combination. Very quickly after the event, we saw photos of the little girl dressed up as an adult. Makeup, hair, costumes, and we found out there was such a thing as a child beauty pageant circuit. We certainly in Australia didn't even know that existed. Also, it was the dawn of the internet. So that stuff spread really quickly and they didn't solve the case. So the longer the case went on without having been solved, the more rumours circulated internationally. The parents apparently weren't cooperating with the police. It was kind of the perfect storm in terms of an intriguing true crime story. Well, here we are 20 years later and it's still unsolved. And the same rumours circulate. I mean, ask my mum. She'll tell you that from day one, I thought it was the brother. She says, I always thought it was the brother. And sure enough, 2 weeks ago, we saw a documentary series where former FBI agents said the same thing. So I had the unlikely opportunity to talk to JonBenet Ramsey's dad, John Ramsey, recently. Now, of course, her mum, Patsy, passed away in 2006 from ovarian cancer. So John and Burke, the son, who is now a grown-up, they are the two people left on the planet who a lot of people think know exactly what happened to JonBenet Ramsey, but still they maintain that a stranger broke into their home, wrote a long ransom letter saying that he was kidnapping the child, but instead murdered the child and left her body in the basement of their home. We'll get to that. We'll get to all of that. We'll get to memories of JonBenet as a normal little girl, memories of Patsy and how a mother ever coped moving on with her life. We'll talk about Burke, what sort of person Burke is. We'll talk about it all. Obviously, I went into this conversation trying to be as polite and encouraging as I could be with John. So please don't contact me to tell me I went too easy on him. That was quite deliberate because I wanted to keep him on the phone for a long time and I wanted to have a wide-ranging conversation with him. And I think I achieved that. So here you go. I'm Michelle Laurie. This is the Nitty Gritty Committee. Stories about the guts and the glory of life with John Ramsey. First and foremost, I wanted to say to you that I'm very sorry for your loss. Even all of these years later, I have six-year-old twins myself. And I think that it gets lost a lot of the time that you buried a daughter. And I just can't imagine how painful that must have been and continues to be.
Well, as a parent, you would know. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome. How do you cope? I mean, most people who deal with a tragedy like yours are allowed to grieve in privacy and to move on in privacy. Mm-hmm. How do you cope with the ongoing fascination around your family's tragedy?
Well, it's kind of a mixed blessing. On the one hand, it brings up emotions again for me, but on the other hand, it keeps the case alive, and that's important. I don't want it to be forgotten. So net-net, the activity and the interest is a good thing.
It must seem, does it seem abstract? Does it seem sometimes like it's not your story and your family's story and JonBenet's story?
No, it really does. Because it does seem like it's out there and something else that it's not us. And it occasionally comes home, but, we just have been trying to live our lives and take care of our living children and be good parents to them. And we still, I still get calls and letters probably 2-3 times a week, emails regarding the case. So that's kind of an ongoing activity for me, is to look at what people are coming up with and, suggesting as possibilities. So that part just doesn't go away. It hasn't gone away in 20 years.
No, it can't, I guess, can it, until there's some kind of resolution?
Yes, right. And there's still people working on the case, so good experienced detectives. So it's still hopeful that we'll get a solution.
What do you remember of the night, the night itself? And I apologize for taking you back to the worst night of your life, but I wonder, having told the story so many times and so many kind of recreations and everything, I mean, do you still remember anything of the night, or do you remember sort of talking about the night?
Probably more talking about the night, because the night was, not eventful. We basically, it was Christmas Day. We had a wonderful Christmas, lots of kids in and out of the house. And then we went over to some friend's house with our children for dinner, and came home at, 9 or 9:30 p.m. and went to bed because we were going to get up early the next morning and meet my older children for kind of a second Christmas. And then we had booked reservations on the Disney Big Red Boat, which is kind of a kids cruise event. And so we had a big, big holiday looking forward to that. But the night before was uneventful.
Gosh, the little kids must have been so excited about the Big Red Boat, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
JonBenet,
of course, they had the excitement of Christmas as well. But,
yeah. And then what do you remember next? You're asleep and you hear your wife, I guess, frantic. Is that how you woke up?
Well, we'd gotten up early. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'd gotten up early and had Patsy and I were getting dressed, and the intent was to not wake the kids up until they were really ready to get in the car, so they could just really get in the car in their pajamas. And I was in the upstairs bathroom and heard Patsy scream my name, and I knew by the tone of it was something serious, and ran downstairs, and she'd found a ransom note on the stairway and had checked JonBenet's room, and kind of in the same process or same time, and we immediately called the police. And I tell people that really was probably the worst moment of my life, in that it was dark, it was cold out, my daughter was gone, my 6-year-old child. As a parent, if you've been in a shopping center or a department store and you lose sight of your child for a minute, you just have this panic feeling, like somebody hits you in the stomach with a 2x4, and that's the feeling I had, and didn't go away.
No, I suspect as a dad as well, we still have this very primitive idea that dads are protectors. I can't imagine as a dad to not know where your baby daughter is. I can't imagine the terror of that.
It's a horrible feeling, absolutely. And you know, for I guess a little bit, I thought, well, we'll get her back, and then we'll go on with our vacation. Then I kind of told myself, no, forget about that. That's not going to happen. This is not going to get resolved right away. And, you know, the note said that they would call us at 10 a.m. tomorrow. I didn't know if they meant tomorrow being today, that day, the 26th, or tomorrow meant the 27th. And I thought, I cannot wait for 24 hours. And so we were waiting for a telephone call, which didn't come. And
and the rest is history, John. The rest is history. So the police and you had some friends come to sort of sit with you and comfort you that morning, and the police came. And much is made of the fact that they say that you, in inverted commas, disappeared for an hour and a half that morning.
You know, I've heard that, and that's just total fiction.
Right.
No, I don't know where that came from, but that was not true. I never left the house, never went outside. Now, the police report said that I went outside to get the mail, which was not true because the mail came through a slot in the door. I was going through the mail to see if there was any more communication from the kidnapper. And the police interpreted that as a casual, see, John went through his bills that morning. No, I was looking for anything else that the kidnapper might have sent to us as a communication, something the police should have done. But no, I never left the house that morning.
Well, speaking of things the police should have done, in the end, you and your friend decided to make another search of the house, another more thorough search of the house.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, after we waited for the phone call, it didn't happen. The one police officer that was there said, why don't you go through the house, see if you can see anything that's out of place or unusual. And so my friend and I did that. And, of course, that was not something we should have been doing. The police should have been doing that. But, you know, the police department at that time did not have the experience. They did not even have a homicide department in their police department. Mm-hmm. And so the people that were there really had no experience in this kind of thing.
Well, also because of the police thought that they were dealing with a kidnapping, and so they were treating it in that way, in which everyone was kind of waiting for the next instruction, right?
Well, that's exactly right. In fact, the police chief made the comment that we didn't treat it as a crime scene because we thought it was a kidnapping. Well, that's kind of a foolish comment, but nevertheless, yeah, that's exactly what happened.
The ransom note said very clearly, don't call the police. So how did you and Patsy come to the place where you decided to ignore element?
There was no question. I mean, I would have called the Army if I could have.
Yeah.
No, you want help. You want help now. And, you know, we thought the police knew what they were doing. You know, my question was, you know, are we closing roads? Do we have people at the airport? What are we doing here? And basically, they weren't doing anything. That was probably one of the mistakes I made, was assuming that the police knew what they were doing, and I should have escalated things.
I can understand that. I can't imagine thinking that I knew better than the police in a situation like that. But you assume
they know what they're doing.
And, yeah.
Turns out they really didn't.
So you and your friend,
you know, that's a problem. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that's one of the problems in the U.S., and I don't know how the structure is in Australia, but the U.S. has 18,000 police jurisdictions.
Yeah, no, that we don't have that. That amazes us that it's so complicated. Who's in charge?
It's
is
insane.
The FBI in charge, or are the local cops in charge?
No. No, the local cops are in charge. So if you, as in our case, the murder investigation was under the jurisdiction of the Boulder Police, and no one could come in and help them unless they asked for help. Now, in their case, they did not ask for help, and that's the one thing I will really hold against them, because there were people that offered help and knew what they were doing, that had experience, and they said, no, this is our case, we'll take care of it. And that was a tragedy. But that's a real problem in the U.S., in my opinion. Mm. Some departments are skilled, have a broad experience in a lot of different areas. Others do not, and yet they're in charge. And it's a real flaw in our system, in my opinion.
So eventually you and your close friend Fleet White went down into the basement as part of just a search to see if there were any other clues left around the house. And again, I apologize for taking you back to this moment.
Yeah, that's all right. We based on what the police officer asked us to do, we were going to look and see if we could find anything that didn't look right or out of place or, you know, a drapery that was brushed aside. I didn't know what we were looking for, but we went down to the basement first, as that's a, you know, was a logical place in my mind to start, because there was outside entrances to the basement through windows. The house had three floors, basically. The upstairs was a bedroom. It would have been very difficult for anybody to get in, but probably impossible for anybody to get in through the third floor. But so we started in the basement. And I noticed that there was a window that was open, and the glass was broken. And I told my friend, I said, I had broken that glass last summer because I'd locked myself out of the house and had come in. I thought we had gotten the glass fixed, but the window shouldn't have been open. And secondly, there was a suitcase standing on its edge under the window. I said, that is definitely out of place. That doesn't belong there.
As a perfect sort of stepping stool to climb up into the window.
I think that was kind of what it looked like. And so then I went into what we called the wine cellar, but it never had any wine in it. It was a old coal room. The house was an old house. And opened the door to that room and immediately saw JonBenet lying there. And it was a rush of relief. And I said, thank God I've got my child back. But I pretty quickly realized that it wasn't good. So
you picked up JonBenet's little body and carried it up the stairs and lay her down on the carpet, sort of in the entry foyer there.
Mm-hmm.
Poor Patsy, I just
I mean, we had the police were waiting, were up there, and I didn't, I mean, what else should you do? I just was screaming. I couldn't say anything other than just screaming. And I guess even though I didn't want to admit that she wasn't alive, I'd hope that we could revive her or, you know, get her help, medical help. But I quickly realized that wasn't going to happen.
So, I mean, how do you feel about the idea that you could have laying her body down there yourself, that you could have gone through the process of creating that scene that you found her in?
Well, it's insane. I mean, you know, why would I do that? First of all, you know, in this country, in the U.S., we have one of the highest child murder rates in the world. And 68% of the time, sadly, it's a caregiver.
Yeah.
But you have to dissect that statistic one more layer, where it is a caregiver in those 68% of the cases. There's a long history of problems that is well known to the schools, to the police, to the neighbors. Where there is not that history, it's extremely rare that a caregiver is responsible for the death of a child. But if you don't take that statistic a step further, then, you know, the police immediately, well, it must be the parents. It's always the parents. And that's as far as it went. And
Well, I'm sure you're. I know that you're aware of the most prominent theory, and so I have to ask you about the stories about Burke's relationship with JonBenet. As a child, the stories come out that he had hit her with a golf club a year before, that he had a history of fecal matter smeared on her things. And
you know, the golf club is correct, but let me tell you what happened. He was standing in the front yard swinging a golf club, a little toy golf club, and JonBenet walked up behind him. He didn't even know she was there, and he bonked her. And
well, as the parent of little kids, I can absolutely see that happening. But I've got to be honest with you, as a parent of little kids, I can also see how one child could accidentally kill another child. And I can also understand how a parent could spend the rest of their lives trying not to let that affect the living child. You know what I mean? I don't think that would even make you a bad person if that theory was true. I didn't think it would make you a bad person at all.
Well, that's just nonsensical.
Okay.
You know, there was a CBS show that came out, and it was disgraceful. And we will sue them, and there'll be a lot more accurate information in the lawsuit. But, you know, let's assume that Burke accidentally or intentionally hit JonBenet, as the CBS documentary claims. What would you do as a parent? Would you say, okay, well, let's strangle her, let's write a 3-page ransom note, and let's fake the whole thing? No, you just said, let's get her to the hospital immediately. It's just crazy. And to think that a parent would do that is just doesn't pass the common sense test. We were told by John Douglas, who's a famous, in fact, he established the FBI criminal profiling program years ago. And he said, if you had done that and acted now the way you do, you would be the most diabolical, evil criminals that have ever walked the planet in history. And so it's nonsense. Yeah, I don't know how else to respond to that.
I guess what makes the case so difficult is that a lot of elements don't seem to pass the common sense test. Like the idea that a kidnapper would stand inside your home and take so long and take a couple of tries at writing this note. Like that's what makes
it
so hard.
Well, you know, this happened 9 months later in our neighborhood. I believe what happened, and this is what happened 9 months later.
I don't know about this story. What happened 9 months later?
Well, a family with a young girl who actually was in JonBenet's, one of her little dance classes, had gone out for the evening. They came home, put their daughter to bed, just as we did, set the burglar alarm, and then they went to bed. They heard later commotion in their daughter's bedroom. They got up and found a man leaning over their daughter in bed, and he bolted and got away. They knew he was in the house when they got home because they had set the burglar alarm when they got home. I have no doubt that person came into our house when we were out for dinner, waited until we went to bed, fell asleep, and then took my daughter from her bed with a stun gun. That's virtually certain that the stun gun was used to turn down the basement. So I have no doubt that this killer was in our house, came into our house when we went out for dinner, and was waiting for us when we got home. Then it happened to say almost identical, except the little girl wasn't killed, thankfully, 9 months later, a couple blocks from her home.
So why is it, do you think, that conspiracy theories around you, Patsy, and Burke are so popular and so well known, and yet this story is so unknown?
Well, you know, what happened, and this has been documented under sworn testimony by the DA and the chief of police, during some depositions that we took, the police intentionally released false information to the media on the case because they wanted to bring pressure on us, Patsy and I.
Yeah.
Intense pressure that the media would bring to bear in the public, and we would then confess or turn the other one in, and the case would be solved. That was the whole strategy. So there's this avalanche of false information. No footprints in the snow. John flew his private jet back to Atlanta. I don't have a private jet. Mm. It was all put out there. The media soaked it up, put it out there, and ignited the lynch mob. But the information was false. It was wrong. But it was done intentionally by the police. So that stimulated all this craziness. And I don't know. I mean, it's madness.
What about this idea that it wasn't politically popular to prosecute you and Patsy? They say the grand jury voted to indict you guys, but the local DA decided
not
to.
Well, they voted. The grand jury was formed, and we offered to testify before the grand jury and were refused. A grand jury in this country, the saying is you can indict a ham sandwich in front of a grand jury. Okay. It's a one-sided argument. Only certain information is presented. We were not indicted. The only thing we were indicted for, which I didn't even know until it came out, was child abuse. And they said we didn't protect our child. And that's, sadly, we didn't. We weren't cautious enough, frankly, in terms of locking doors and setting the burglar alarm. We thought we lived in a peaceful little town. It turns out it wasn't at all. But we had petitioned the judge to release the entire grand jury proceedings because we knew the intent of the grand jury by the prosecutor, and it was a special prosecutor, who replaced the existing district attorney. He wanted to get an indictment for murder against Patsy and or I. I'm not sure which, but because they tended to vacillate between whether I was the killer or Patsy was the killer.
Yeah.
And that's the best he could come up with out of a grand jury, which is not very good, frankly. We fully expected to be indicted. Our attorneys told us, he said, look, we cannot promise you that you won't be indicted.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The system is broken, but if you are indicted, we will guarantee you one thing with 100% money-back guarantee. We will kill them in court because they don't have a case. There's no case. And there's exculpatory evidence. There's DNA. There's, a federal judge in Atlanta reviewed the case, Atlanta, Georgia, reviewed the case and wrote an opinion that there was abundant evidence for an intruder. I think people want an answer. I mean, it's a horrible, horrible crime for a child to be murdered. And that is beneath even the lowest criminal mind. Even hardcore criminals would not harm a child. And so it's a horrible crime, and people want an answer. Well, the easiest answer is, well, it must have been parents. case solved. They can't, they don't want to admit or accept that someone could come in your home, take your child from their bed, and murder them. I never expected that. You know, we didn't use the burglar alarm. I didn't care if people came in and stole the silverware or the TV. It didn't matter to me. I never dreamed that someone would come in and take my child.
No.
And yet that capacity is out there.
Your friend Fleet White released a letter, wrote a public letter, in which he said lots of things. One of the things he said was that you and your wife retained prominent lawyers and were not cooperating with the police. Do you feel as though...
Well...
Go on.
Well, I mean, yeah, but that's, of course, one thing we've been criticized for.
Yeah.
We didn't retain lawyers. We have a good friend who is a former district attorney in Colorado and had experience with the Boulder police. And he got a call from inside the system. I don't know who it was, and he won't tell me, and I don't care. He said, you need to get John and Passy the best defense lawyers you can get. This was within a couple of days after the murder.
So that looks bad, doesn't it?
Zeroing in on them.
It's terrible. It looks bad. So someone's thinking they're being helpful and saying, oh, I need to let the parents know that they need defense counsel.
Right.
But to the rest of the world, that looks like, yeah. Oh, well, they know they killed their kids. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, of course, the police attitude is, well, you don't need a lawyer if you're innocent. Well, that's not true at all. Mm-hmm. If you're innocent and you're dealing with the police, you better have a very good lawyer, at least in this country. So anyway, that's how lawyers came about. I mean, my friend Mike, who was the attorney he asked me, he said, would you allow me to do some things I think are necessary to do? And I said, certainly. And next thing you know, he's introducing me to my attorney. And I said, what do I need an attorney for? And he said, trust me, you do. I said, okay. I mean, you're not, I was in shock. You cannot make good decisions at all.
Yeah.
And that lack of ability to make good decisions lasts a long time, much longer than you think it does as the individual. I made some terrible decisions over the next 2-3 years in terms of selling houses and, you know, quitting jobs and the stuff that you just do not make good decisions when you're in that state of shock.
No, I can understand that. That sounds reasonable.
So we accepted the fact that there were attorneys that we needed, and we'd already talked to the police at length prior to that. And our attorney said, well, when they came on board, they told the police, look, the Ramseys will be happy to talk to you, but we want to see transcripts of, you know, their previous interviews that they've already given you, and they wouldn't do it. And then the police refused to release JonBenet's body for burial.
Oh, no.
And that incensed us. And that got resolved very quickly, but again, by my friend Mike, who is a former district attorney. He called and said, you cannot do that. That's absurd. But it immediately heightened the gap of trust between us and the police. Their distrust. We were shocked that they would do such a thing.
It's very hard to feel as though you're on the same side, isn't it, when they won't let you bury your baby?
No, it was disgraceful. And yet it was, that's what we were dealing with, was this mentality within a very inexperienced, poorly led police department.
So we know that from the Dr. Phil interview recently that Burke is well aware of the theories and was certainly well aware before this CBS documentary series went to air that a lot of people think that he is responsible for the death of his little sister. Do you remember when he became aware of that? I mean, he was only 9 at the time. When did he realize that people thought it was him?
I don't know. Really, we tried. I mean, keep in mind, Burke was a 9-year-old child. He weighed 60 pounds.
Yeah.
This is a very brutal, savage murder. And to think that a 60-pound child could do that, it just doesn't, again, pass the common sense test. But we tried to shield Burke from, you know, the tabloid headlines that said mom did it, that dad did it, that Burke did it. Probably we started to sue the tabloids in, 2000, 2001, something like that, on behalf of Burke, because they were going with that story. And we settled cases, four or five cases, against the tabloids. And I'm sure at that point Burke knew that that was out there. And so he'd have been, 12 or 13, I guess, by then, 14. He'd been 13 or 14.
God, that's an incredible burden, isn't it?
Burke's a... Well, it's, I mean, Burke knows it's nonsense. And, when we filed these suits originally against the tabloids, they're for multi-million dollars. And Burke's reaction was, good, I don't have to get a job now. No, that's not the answer. Burke was a good big brother to his sister. They loved each other and had fun together. And, typical brother-sister issues occasionally, but they were a pair.
I can hear you remembering moments when you say that.
One of the things I remember about both of them, if we were out for dinner or going up to a building where there's an elevator, they would both run ahead to try to push the elevator button, and kind of depending on who got there first. So JonBenet made a deal with Burke. She said, okay, I'm the up girl, and you can be the down guy. And I thought, man, is she ever the up girl? Because she had a, effervescent personality. So she was the up girl on the elevators.
Yeah. Now, the Burke chat with Dr. Phil was, it was strange to watch, but I'm very aware that when we're all watching for clues in somebody's face, that's a strange situation, and Burke had to know that as he was being filmed. There was a lot of pressure on him, and so a lot's been made of his smiling during that chat. What do you make of it?
It's interesting. I was with Burke a couple days ago, and I was just watching his what you saw on television was Burke, and I was watching him as we were talking about his job and what he was doing. He naturally smiles when he talks. Now, it's just his facial expression, and I thought, that's Burke. That's just the way he talks, and it looks perhaps like a smile to people, but it's the way he forms words, and so that's how he talks. And I'd never really noticed it until people said, he's smiling. But, it's a looking different to me. But I specifically watched him as we were sitting there over coffee, and he was talking about what he's doing in his job and stuff. And I thought, he's smiling. But you would interpret it as a smile, but just that's the way he forms words. Looks like a smile.
With all the information that's suddenly, because we haven't seen Burke since he was a little boy, we've all thought about him and had theories about him. All of a sudden, there he is, and then due to the CBS documentary, there's all of this other information about him. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but there's a lot of people online were sort of speculating that Burke was on the autism spectrum, and that's the only thing that made sense with all of this story. No?
No, that's nonsense. No, absolutely nonsense. Burke graduated from Purdue in computer engineering. He's a very good student. Purdue's a very good school. He's working as a senior software developer and doing very well with his career. So I couldn't be prouder of him. And he's as normal a young man as I think you'd ever find. But, the internet speculation is... It can be very bizarre and pretty uninformed, so I don't pay any attention to it, frankly.
Unfortunately, it's one of those things. JonBenet's death came at that sort of the beginning of the internet, didn't it? And so it's been this ongoing storyline that for people who aren't involved, for you it's a nightmare, but for others it's just a kind of an ongoing story.
Well, it's a real life whodunit.
Yeah.
I mean, I get letters every week or emails on theories of, I think I know who did this. I've read all the tabloids and here's my answer. It's like, and I read them because I think, well, one of these days there's going to be a silver bullet. And we've had a few that looked very interesting.
Well, there was that man who came forward. There was that man who came forward a few years ago and confessed to the crime.
Yeah. We've had others confess.
Wow.
And it's pretty easy to see that they're. I had one that wanted to come and turn himself in and wanted to talk to me first. I talked to him for 45 minutes. In the end, he wanted me to send him $2,000 so he could buy airline tickets fly to Boulder to turn himself in. Well, that was a red flag. So he was discounted, although our investigators did locate the guy, and he was a fraud. But this particular guy, John Mark Carr, had carried on a dialogue with Professor Tracy at the University of Colorado for about 2 years and was always hinting that he was involved, but never really came out and said it and did not want to be found. And eventually wrote an email to Tracy saying, I did it, basically. And Tracy took that to our attorneys. And we'd been aware of these emails, but they're just real bizarre. And our attorneys went to the district attorney and said, this probably should be taken seriously, and gave them a history. And they didn't know where he was. And he took great efforts to disguise this internet whereabouts, and frankly, through some very amazing detective work, which involved the Boulder District Attorney's Office, the Secret Service, the Canadian Mounties, the Thai Police, Secret Service. They located the guy within a square block in Bangkok, and they couldn't get any tighter than that. So he was infatuated with Patsy for some reason. And so Michael Tracy called or sent him an email and said, look, I got this great picture of Patsy, but if I email to you, it's not going to come through very good. You'd probably like to have it. Give me an address. I'll mail it to you. And he bit. And he gave him a Kinko or a copy center address.
Oh.
And the Thai police staked out the copy center for a week. He finally came in, picked up.
Yeah. Did you believe in it? Did you, for a minute, did you think this was it?
Well, I tell you, I didn't, because until we had information of a DNA match, but it brought me how difficult it was going to be when we do find the killer.
I did not want to leave you without talking about Patsy, who it's heartbreaking. Patsy died in 2006 after a battle with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And she, at that stage, mm-hmm. she never knew that she had been exonerated through DNA evidence.
No, she didn't. But, Patsy was a very strong woman and very, I don't know what the right word is, self-assured. But she'd had cancer in 1994, stage 4 ovarian. And it was very serious. And she went through some very intensive experimental chemotherapy for a year. And the cancer was in remission. So she was grateful for her life at that point, more so than ever.
Gosh.
And she'd be given the opportunity to raise her children. And so to think that Patsy would murder her child after that is insane. But when JonBenet was murdered, what got us both up off the floor was the realization we had three other children that needed us now more than ever. And
so
they were
those are Burke, and you have two children from a previous
Burke,
marriage, yeah?
And I have older children, yeah. Melinda and John.
Yeah.
And, they were heartbroken. They'd lost a sibling. And so it really forced Patsy and I to not have a pity party and get back to the business of being good parents. And, and Patsy, particularly for Burke, she really she was very focused on both children. And given the chaos that was around us at that time, then Burke became just a huge priority for her to protect him, because we didn't know who was out there. You know, we had police, 24-hour police protection at our home for a year, because we were afraid. We didn't know who'd done this, whether they'd come back. And I realized, well, the media's out there too, so they're gonna be just as good as the police. So they were out there 24 hours a day too. So we said, well, maybe we don't need the police after a year. So,
do you have a memory that you go back to?
Patsy lived for children, the beauty pageant thing was something, of course, she was roundly criticized for. Patsy did that as a young lady. She got scholarship money. She was a fun experience for her. JonBenet had her personality. She was very outgoing. And they had fun with it. And I think Patsy, deep down, knew that she wasn't going to be around when JonBenet was 16, 17, 18. So she was doing a lot to pack in mother-daughter stuff. And she took JonBenet to New York with some other mothers and their daughters. Well, the other daughters were 15 and 16. JonBenet was 5, 6. I think she did it because she knew she probably wasn't going to be there when JonBenet was 16. So Patsy was a wonderful mother. I couldn't imagine a better mother for my children. And she was a wonderful mother to her stepchildren. And that was very important to me as well. So she's an amazing person. And for her to be so maligned, it's really sad, because that's not who she was at all.
And then to pass away so young and with still so much troubling her. It's a terrible situation, unresolved.
Yeah, and I'm sure she, but when we were cleared by the district attorney, for me, and I think it would have been the same for Patsy, it was like, okay, well, we knew that.
Yeah.
Now let's get on with finding the killer. It wasn't a celebration at all. We just said, okay, fine, we knew that. It just took you a long time to realize that. Now let's go find the killer. And we had a day-long meeting with the district attorney and her staff that week, talking about, what do we need to do here? What do you need from us? So it wasn't a, and I think Patsy would have viewed it the same way.
Was Patsy able to find any peace towards the end of her life?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, she was very, very devoted to Burke and his schooling and his life. She took up painting. She always wanted to paint, and she complained that the only thing she painted was a house, and that wasn't what she had in mind. But she started to paint pictures, flowers. And she did, I don't know, probably a dozen paintings or a year and a half period. And they were really good. It was just natural talent. And she had lots of friends. Her friends were wonderful. And that's the thing, people would say, well, how is it to be out in public when, the media and the police are accusing you of being murderers? People were wonderful to us. Hmm. They'd stop us, give us hugs, apologize for what was being done to us. It was wonderful to be out in public. We were being crucified and threatened with a lynching by the media, but individual people were wonderful. And that helped a lot.
Yeah, what a discovery that people are good in that moment.
Yeah, I know, and it really made me a better person. I realized, hey, these people have problems and troubles they're dealing with, but they reach out to me, and I'm a better person for it. Same for people now than were before. I kind of wore blinders. And so, yeah, no, I'm my fellow man. They're good, basically. And there's some bad ones, but ours are good.
Oh, this phone's still breaking up a little bit. But I have one more question, which is that, do you ever allow yourself to imagine the world in which JonBenet was still with you? She would be 26 years old now.
Yeah, not... No, I really don't. I still think of JonBenet as she was. She was a six-year-old little girl, Betty's girl, and that's how I think of her. And I did see one of her friends a couple of years ago, where they were buddies and same age, and she was now grown up, and it's like, wow, you know, it was kind of a shock in a way. But it made me think, well, I wonder, yeah, it's JonBenet would have grown up, but in my mind, she's a six-year-old little girl that come running up to me when I got home. So, but yeah, you can't think about the what ifs. You just can't go there. No. What if I had not moved to Boulder, Colorado? What if I had not? What if I had used the burglar alarm that night? You know, all these what ifs. But you can't go down that path very far.
And have you found a life for yourself? Have you remarried?
I did. I was, after Patsy died, I was single for 5 years about, I guess, and then remarried and found a rather unique girl that
she's a designer? Fashion designer or something?
Yeah, she's a fashion designer, costume designer. She did a lot of you know, stage design, show business design, and very good at it. She grew up as a missionary child in Ethiopia.
Wow.
And she learned to sew because she had to make her own clothes in Ethiopia and became a very good seamstress. And then that migrated into a design shop where she did costumes for shows and stuff for, I guess, 18 years. And she had a good sense of humor. I took her out for dinner and called her the next week and said, would you like to have dinner again? She said, no, I'm not really feeling anything here. So, well, at least she's honest. So we eventually got back together.
Wow. Well, that is good. That is good. You deserve some. Obviously everyone deserves some happiness, but boy, have you worked for it.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Well,
I mean, I know that you said that you would never talk to the media again. I don't know what made you decide to talk to me, but I'm ever so grateful you did.
No, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate your questions and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience. But, one of these days I'll visit Australia. I've always wanted to, so.
You must. We love Americans. Very easy for Americans to visit here. Everything's basically the same, but maybe 5 years ago for you.
Yeah, which that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's dedicate our chat to the memories. Let's dedicate our chat to the memories of JonBenet and Patsy, yeah?
Well, yes, that's wonderful. I agree.
Thank you, John. Have a great night.
All right, Michelle, thank you.
That was John Ramsey, JonBenet Ramsey's father. And I have to say a big thank you and just bloody well done shout out to my producers from Kiss FM. We do the breakfast show in Melbourne every morning, Monday to Friday, 6 till 9. I have great producers and in particular Brad Hume and Whitney Plowman, who chased John Ramsey for weeks, and Whitney developed a relationship with John, and she pulled this across the line when John told Dr. Phil a couple of weeks ago that he would never speak to the media again. So well done you, Whit, and thank you so much for all your hard work. Thank you everyone who's downloaded this podcast, and especially thank you to those people who've gone to iTunes and given us a few stars to help bump us up that ladder and get other people to notice this podcast. It means the world to me. Thank you all so much. Back soon with another episode of the Nitty Gritty Committee. I'm Michelle Laurie.
Hi, I'm Mia Friedman, and I have no filter. Not in life, not in work. and especially not on my podcast. Every fortnight, I speak to some of the world's most interesting people about life, their career, and how they feel about things, what makes them tick. From Rosie Batty.
I think of Luke. I'm consumed with thoughts of Luke. You know, I dream of Luke. I wake up thinking of Luke. Yeah. I'm thinking of Luke even when I don't realise I'm thinking of Luke.
Yeah. To Taria Pitt.
Well, the fly was only 5 seconds of my life. I don't want to let that 5 seconds tell me who I am and what I can do and what I can't do in this world.
It's the podcast where too much information is never enough. Subscribe to No Filter in iTunes or your favourite podcast app.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.